Those of you who come from dysfunctional families, you should feel good when you read this week's parsha, because you realize that this has been a long Jewish tradition going back a very long way. And the whole relationship, and there are multiple relationships here. You have the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, which is an interesting relationship. You have the relationship between Yitzchak and Esav, which is an interesting relationship. You have the relationship between Yitzchak and Yaakov, which is interesting. You have no relationship, by the way, between Esav and Rivka. There's virtually no relationship whatsoever, but that itself is a relationship. And then, of course, you have the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, which is an interesting relationship. Although you could even say that maybe all of those, I can then do it again and say not just relationship between Yitzchak and Yaakov, or Yaakov and Esav, but between Esav and Yaakov, and there's two sides to it, obviously. And it's probably worthwhile to try to figure out each and every one of those relationships, but if you did, then you would need far more time than we're going to put it in today. But I'm just saying that as the starting point. But there's obviously something which is very troubling. Second thing, Esav in the Chumash does not look as bad as Esav does in the rabbinic tradition. In rabbinic tradition, Esav looks much, much worse. There are certain things that I can begin to say, you know, perhaps even to feel bad to the Esav written in the Chumash. And we know that Chazal work with a couple of principles. One of the principles that they love to use is that good people are very good and bad people are very bad, and whenever you have to interpret them, then you tend to paint somebody bad in the worst light imaginable. So you will have the rabbis telling us in this week's parsha that Esav is guilty of every single sin you can imagine, and Baruch Hashem, probably a couple of sins that most of you couldn't imagine. So that's what Chazal do, and you can argue whether that's justified or not. It is interesting that the pasuk in Malachi, which is in source number one, which is probably the Haftorah, Masadver Hashem El Yisrael Biad Malachi, Ahavti etchem amar Hashem, b'martem b'me ahavtanu, halo ach Esav liYaakov num Hashem, v'ohev et Yaakov, v'et Esav soneti, and God says, I hated. Now, hatred is a very strong word. God says, I hated Esav. So therefore, over here you have, at least in the Nevuah, you have a very, very strong statement against Esav, which leads me to a second point that we have to be careful about. Not every time that Chazal are talking about Esav are they talking about Esav. Esav becomes a typography. Esav becomes a representation of something else. Depending at which type of literature and perhaps which time it's speaking, it may be talking about something completely different. Eventually, Esav comes to represent Christianity. What in the world Esav, the biblical Esav, has to do with Christianity is somewhat questionable. Let's put it that way. But that's what Esav comes to represent. And the same way that at some point Yishmael is going to come to represent Islam, even though Islam was not around during the time of what we would normally call Chazal. But when it comes to Esav, we have to be careful, because who are they talking about? I mean, for example, very often in rabbinic literature, Esav is going to represent Rome. Esav is, without even Christianity, Esav is Rome. And part of it is because you couldn't come out with a full clearly and state what you think about Rome, but you can talk about how Esav is so bloodthirsty and Esav is so terrible, and that you can get away with because they don't necessarily know that we're talking about them. So you have to be careful who it is that we're talking about when we look at the commentaries. But this verse is interesting, because this verse over here is not talking about Christianity, unless you want to say it's completely prophetic, and it's not talking about Rome. This is talking about Esav, but again, as Esav is representative at later points within Tanakh, not necessarily about the biblical, or the core biblical story itself, but it's talking about an extension of that. But over here, we do see this absolute hatred which is being expressed. Now, if that's the case, then perhaps the biggest question that we have, and we consider all of our relationships, perhaps the biggest question then becomes the relationship between Yitzchak and Esav, because if God comes and reveals that he hates Esav, and Yitzchak is a man of God, then why is Yitzchak so unattuned to God's perspective on things? So, that is our introduction. when we start the parsha, we find as follows. Ela told that Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham alidei Yitzchak. V'Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana, that will be important later on. Yitzchak is 40 years old. B'kachto et Rivka bat Putuel Armimi Padan Aram. When he marries Rivka, we have no idea from the biblical text how old she is, even though all of you know how old she was, but we have no idea from the biblical text how old she may be. You can basically guess any age that you want, and we can support that. Achot Lavan Harami Lo Leisha. So it's interesting that it mentions her both as the daughter of Betuel, but also as a sister of Lavan. V'etar Yitzchak LaHashem LeNochach Ishto Ki Akarahi. And over here we have Yitzchak praying, apparently for the second time that we've seen in the text, because Halach L'Soch B'Sadeh seems to be a prayer as well. Which means that we have Yitzchak reaching out to God two times before God ever speaks to him, right? God will end up speaking to Yitzchak twice in this week's parasha, but this is Yitzchak praying, and his prayers work. I mean, last time, we don't know why he went out to the field, what he was praying for. If you look at some of the commentaries, look at the Sforno, for example, what was he praying for? He was praying for a shidduch. He was praying for the mission to succeed. Listen, it wasn't that Yitzchak did nothing when it came to dating. He did the important thing, and the important thing is the prayers that you say, quite obviously. So therefore, that part he did, and immediately he says his prayer, and you know, she shows up right away. He didn't even go to the kotel for 40 days. He didn't like do, which I don't know when somebody made that up, because, but that's not. There are many things that people do which are relatively recent. Amuka, by the way, Amuka as a place to go pray for a shidduch was created within the lifetime of most people in this room. You will not find a source older than 1950. I'm not saying anybody's older than 1950 here, but I'm saying you won't find a source older than that says that Amuka is the place that people go to pray. But listen, in your lifetimes also, they discover the grave of Rabbi Akiva's wife. Somebody put up a sign, Rabbi Akiva's wife is buried over here. So if there's any rock over here in this area that you want to make significant, put a sign up and say, Kivrei Tzadikim, and this is a skula, and this guarantees for so on and so forth, and make sure to put a pushka next to it, which goes to whatever women's study you want to try to fund. Okay. Yitzchak Davins for his wife, Ki Akarahi, Ve'yatar Lo Hashem, and God responds to them, Vatahar Rivka Ishto. And she becomes pregnant. And by the way, there's a lot of emphasis in the parasha. I talked about the relationships. Ishto, I mean, it didn't have to say Ishto, but Rivka. There's an overemphasis on the relationships over here. Bina Hagadol, Bina Hakatan, right? There's just a lot of that which will go on. V'yidwatsitsua banim bikir ba, v'tomer inkin lamaza anochi. Which is interesting because both within Yitzchak and Rivka, we see, in a very obvious way, a highly developed religious sensibilities doing things which people would do today. He davens and she goes to search for a divine answer for what's going on in their lives. And most likely, I mean, all the Rishonim comment on this, and what was it that troubled her? Most likely she's never been pregnant before, and it wasn't as wonderful as perhaps some people had told her it would be. And the other thing is she apparently does not know she's pregnant with twins. So over here the pregnancy is a particularly difficult one. And she goes to seek a divine answer. Pasukav Gimel is interesting because over here you also have another relationship that we didn't really discuss, and that's the relationship between God and Rivka, and God perhaps and Yitzchak. So we see so far God answers Yitzchak, now we see her speaking by Yomar Hashem La. Now, I will tell you, you can figure out why this is, but the commentaries bend over backwards to avoid what the words actually say. By Yomar Hashem La. God said to her. No, God really didn't speak to her. It's perhaps unbecoming. God should speak to her. God, she went to shame ve'ever, and shame told her, and so on and so forth. Is that what the words say? Vayomer Hashem la. God said to her. And the law is emphasized. It's strong. Vayomer Hashem la. God says to her, Shnei goyim bevitneich, u'shnei l'umim mimeyachi paredu. You have two different nations inside. They're going to go into two different directions. And all she went for was to find out if her pregnancy was okay. And she just now got far too much information. And I know what the Midrashim say, and you know what the Midrashim say, that when she would pass by a shul, did everyone like wonder, which shul did she pass by? Right? But she went by, right? If she went by a shul, then... because this is for Yitro Tzitzu. Yitro Tzitzu, Ratzu. They went, one tried to run here, one tried to run there. So it's really an attempt to explain by Yitro Tzitzu. To look for significance of what's going on. But, okay, I'm not sure if she necessarily wanted to know how the story ends. Which means, I know some of you in this room, that when you get a book and you start reading, you're going to skip to the end and look how it ends. Yes? And who's going to admit this? None of you are going to admit this?
No, but the story of life, I do want to know how it
ends. You want to know how it ends? You
really?
And do you want to know which one of your children you should invest in? Do you realize what a curse this information is? Like, what's the spiritual significance of what's going on? Oh, I'll let you know. You have two different kids inside. Which, by the way, right there was probably enough information. You have two children over here. Again, I'm going to say is that as far as I understand the difficulty in her pregnancy, you like this, that I'm an expert in this now, that the difficulty in her pregnancy was not knowing that she's carrying twins. The response should be, you were carrying twins and that's what's going on. But you're right, she's looking for spiritual significance. But Yom HaShemlah, God says, look, I'll give you the full thing over here. He pulls out the file. Oh, Yaakov and Esau. He blows the dust off of it and says, okay, let me tell you what's going to go on over here. You're going to have two different kids. They are going to fight with one another. Okay, fine. That's information that we kind of expect. But the younger one is the one who's going to be successful. So I'm saying now, once you have this information, first of all, it's very, very heavy. The term which is used over here in Source 1, Masad Dvar Hashem Yisrael. What does the word Masa mean? The word Masa. A burden. Sometimes prophecy is called a burden. Sometimes having information is a burden. It's something which is heavy, it's something which is difficult. You would think, oh, I have prophecy, this is the greatest thing in the world. Some prophecies are very, very heavy. And when they're introduced this way, again, I'm not saying that with Rivka, but it's just a very good juxtaposition of that prophecy in Malachi. So over here, you now, just one more second, now you have a great moral problem, because your great moral problem is, do you share this information with your husband, or do you not share this information with your husband? And again, I was already wrong about you looking at the end of the book, so I'm not even going to ask you what secrets you may or may not keep from your spouses. Yes?
Just want to see if she just she's having trouble with pregnancy, she can go to a doctor, not to God.
Correct. She's looking for something. And I'm going to say it again. That's the reason why Chazal say that when she went by a place of Odeh Zarah, she feels a pull in one way. When she goes by a shul, she feels a pull in the other way. That she feels something on it. Correct. And again, the information she ends up getting now is something which... Will this affect, let's put it this way, will this now affect the way that she's going to raise her children? Or will it be like old parents who will lie and say, no, I treat all my children the same way? Yes? I did have the special joy of teaching this in front of my mother a couple years ago. So. And I did say to her, I know that you tell the others that you treat them all equally, but we know the truth. Yes? Right, and so therefore it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it could be that Rivka had seen those studies, and therefore she makes the decision not to tell Yitzchak. Because telling Yitzchak is also going to create... He needs love also. He also needs nurturing. He also needs something. And it could be that the way that she feels inwardly about these two children, because of the information that she has, will prevent her from giving what she really thinks this other child needs. But what choice does she have at this point? Because she knows. So therefore, that's why I'm going to say it again. On the one hand, you can tell me that it's not moral for her not to tell her husband. On the other hand, I can argue that it's not moral for her to tell her husband. And again, I'm specifically using morality as our gauge right now. I can't begin to go in other directions with this. But the moral thing, what is the right thing to do? So, you know what, we'll start all over again. This is all complicated. Right? Yes? Again, if this was Facebook, then status, she would have to say relationship, complicated. It's complicated. It will be dysfunctional as well, but it's at this point, it's at this point complicated. The other thing that she may feel is that when she was before she could give birth to her child, her husband prays and God answers her husband. And maybe she has this sense that he was off there praying in the field when she met him the first time. He's praying for a wife and she shows up. And maybe she does get the sense that he's a very holy person. By the way, this is working against communication. If he's a very holy person and God chose not to tell him, then who is she to tell him? Vayomer Hashem la. God said to her. Which means if he is so holy and God wanted him to know this, this is God's realm to decide what information goes to which person. But again, I'm just trying to show that the second she gets this information, you can say she was looking for it, she wanted to know it, but this puts her in such a difficult situation at this point. How is now she supposed to conduct herself the rest of her life in terms of the relationship with her children? That's it. And from this point on, everything is complicated. And I do think the choice that she takes is not to tell her husband. I think the reason she chooses not to tell him is because, again, if God wanted him to know, God would have told him. And secondly, what kind of life will this child have if he feels completely rejected from both of his parents from the very first day that he enters into this world, which is, again, a very... By the way, you can now flip it around, as you started to say before. Why does Esav become Esav? Because his mother... everything comes down to the mother's fault. Correct? Correct. Okay. As long as that's clarified. The one who blames the parents the most in this, it's very, very famous, is Shem Shemfal Hirsch. You can read it. He absolutely blames the parents for... I don't think he is even close to being right in anything that he says in this, but people quote it all the time because they like it. Because whenever you can blame the parents, it's good. You can blame important people, it's good. And his point is, you know, even a Rivka and Yitzchak could mess up in education. Therefore, we have to be careful. His main claim is that he says that the mistake that they made, which, by the way, I think has far more to do with Germany in the time that he lived than has to do anything to do with Yaakov and Esav. His main claim is that you can't have uniform education for all people, and that you need different types of educational opportunities for different types of people. And the mistake that Yitzchak and Rivka did is they raised them both absolutely the same, and therefore one was ADHD, or you can just use your own language here, and the other one was a high achiever academically, and therefore one came out wonderfully and the other came out very differently, and it was all the parents' fault because they gave the same education. Very nice Dvar Torah, but I think has nothing to do with the text itself. Anyway, but now if nothing else, you have something that you can say on maybe worth to look at it inside, but he does say it over here in the beginning of the parasha. Okay. Continue. Vayim Pasuk Kaf Dalet. Vayim Lu Yomeha Laledet. Time comes for her to give birth. V'hine tumim bevitna. And lo and behold, there are twins. V'yetzi harishon admoni kulo ka'aderet se'ar v'yikru'u shmo Esav. By the way, it's important to notice symmetry or lack of symmetry. Who names him? V'yikru'u. V'yikru'u could be both parents, most likely everybody calls him. And what does the name Esav mean? Rashi says, "V'yikru'u shmo Esav hakol kru lo kein." Everybody called him Esav. Lefisha haya naaseh v'nigmar b'sa'aro k'ben shenim harbe. That he looked like he was complete. He looked Esav from Asu. He was complete. He was done. You know, it's quite sad if a child of 1 hour old looks like he's completely developed, and he's considered completely developed, and he's reached his emotional maturity that he's getting to, and so on and so forth. That's something which is quite likely. And the whole interpretation is based on something which is exterior, something which is superficial, not something which is inside, and how much this has to do with the personality of Esav, who's going to become somebody who perhaps will be very superficial and lacks inner integrity. Rashi was there in source number 3, if you needed to see that Rashi. Continue Pasuk Kavav. V'acharechen yotza achiv v'yad, again, relationship. Yotza achiv v'yado ochezet ba'akev esav v'yikra shmo Yaakov. And his name, he was called, who called him? V'yikra shmo Yaakov. So you notice again the lack of symmetry. There, Vayikru, here's Vayikra. Who calls him Yaakov? His father calls him Yaakov. He's holding on to Esav's leg. So therefore he calls him Yaakov. By the way, you can go through the whole Chumash. Rivka never calls him Yaakov. My son. Not once in the narrative will she call, again, look through, if you find it, you'll let me know. She always calls him my son, she never calls him Yaakov. Over here it says, Vayikra shmo Yaakov. Who calls him Yaakov? Who calls him Yaakov? Yitzchak calls him Yaakov. Yitzchak will call him Yaakov, right? Hakol call Yaakov, and so on. She never calls him Yaakov. She always calls him my son. Anyway, the Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledetotam, and Yitzchak was 60 years old when they were born, which means that they suffered through 20 years of infertility. Vayigadlu ha'ne'arim, which again, we don't know her age. If you do want to argue that she was 3 years old, so then fertility in the first 10, 12 years or so may not have been as devastating as if she starts out at 20. I'm saying that her age at the point they get married does make a very big difference. Vayigadlu ha'ne'arim, by the way, over there, Rashi, this is the only thing that Rav Hirsch can go on. Vayigadlu ha'ne'arim, Rashi says, and this is very surprising, he says they were indistinguishable till this point. And indistinguishable, not in terms of what they looked. Sometimes twins look more alike than you would think, but in terms of behavior. Vayigadlu ha'ne'arim, vayihi Esav ish yodea tzayid, ish sadeh, v'yakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. How old are they at this point? Well, according to tradition, Avram dies when they're 15 years old. So they're sometime between bar mitzvah and 15. Again, that's according to tradition, but again, the exact age does not concern me all that much, that they grow up. This point of saying that they were absolutely the same is actually not something which the text really pushes you to. They grew up, and it became very clear that they have two very different children. Now, I want to ask a question, and this is the key question for today. This is it. This is what you need to know. We need to consider. When Yitzchak sees his two children, one of them is a man of the tents, and the other one is a man who is described over here as Ish Yodea Tzayid, a man who's a hunter. What exactly will be going on through Yitzchak's mind? Again, Rivka does not tell him about the spiritual identity of the two children. That she keeps to herself. Yitzchak now has his own information staring at him, and what is he supposed to discern from this information? So I'll tell you that if I were Yitzchak, the way that I would look at it, and I'll make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. But first level, he sees these two. One of them reminds him of his father, and that is the one who sits in the tents. Avram is the one who sits in the tents. Avram uses the tents. He brings people in. He makes them pray. He makes them thank God. He teaches them about monotheism, which means one of them is a man who reminds him absolutely of his holy father. And the other one reminds him of somebody who was the only other hunter who's been mentioned in the Torah till now, and that is Nimrod. So over here you have this genealogical quirk that from Avraham's family, you end up having a Avraham clone on the one hand, and in the same womb, you end up having a Nimrod clone in the same time. And the decision over here of what Yitzchak should do, or how Yitzchak should orient himself to the two children, should in reality be the easiest decision that he can possibly make. Why? Because one reminds him of his father, the other reminds him of Nimrod. I mean, Nimrod is the most sinister person. I don't know if you know this, but even today in Israel, somebody wants to name their child Nimrod, most of the Mohalim will talk to the parents and say, no, you can't name Nimrod. Nimrod was a terrible person, and so on. I mean, I've heard Mohalim go over to people and say, no, Nimrod was like Hitler. Nimrod was a mass murderer. Nimrod was somebody, again, the name Nimrod, what does it mean? The one who rebelled, Nimrod. I mean, the rebellious person. And over here, sitting in Yitzchak's, you know, tent, growing up, the two kids, he's looking at them. He's got a Nimrod, and he's got an Avraham. And who is it that he's supposed to favor? And again, Rivka never tells him, but there's no question in my mind that he knows far more than he's letting on to, because he looks and he sees this, and he makes a decision. The decision that he makes is actually a fascinating decision, but it goes back again to a lack of symmetry, which the next pasuk tells us. Pasuk Kafchet says, "V'yehav Yitzlak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv." He loves Esav because of the tzayid, because of the hunt, because of the food that he provides him. V'rivka ohevet et Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. Now again, the lack of symmetry over here in this family is, okay, the lack of symmetry is not the first thing you notice. The first thing you notice is the dysfunctionality of the family, where the father loves one child and the mother loves the other child. But that's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem over here is actually the first clause, where it says that Yitzchak loves Esav ki tzayid b'fiv. Now there's two ways of reading this. The way that perhaps you're used to is the way that Rashi told us to read it, and it says that he fooled his father. He fooled his father. How did he fool his father? He would ask him all kinds of questions. He would make believe he was very, very religiously observant. And therefore, kitzayid befiv, he used his mouth to hunt his father. Now, I just hope you appreciate that's very far from pshat. The previous pasuk said that he's a hunter. And he's a hunter. He says that his father loves him because of the hunt that he provides him and he puts in his mouth. Which means, and again, which is stranger? That Yitzchak loves Esav because of the food that he gives, or that Yaakov is loved by his mother? Yeah. Again, Rivka loves Yaakov, is that strange? Or Yitzchak loves Esav because he gives him food? Which is the stranger clause? It's clearly the strange one is that it has to, when it has to say that a parent loves the child because. The parent loves the child because they're their child. So therefore, had it really said that Yitzchak loves Esav and Rivka loves Yaakov, fine, I would not say anything right now. And I would say, maybe, you know what, maybe he was fooled and maybe all kinds of things. But no, it's not what it says. And again, I'm going to tell you, you have to read carefully, and whenever there's a lack of symmetry, that is already a hint that there's something else which is going on. There was a lack of symmetry in the names that were given. They called him Esav, he calls him Yaakov. Which really means what? It really means that Rivka knows he's not really Yaakov. Because Yaakov is a name of subservience to Esav. Is Yaakov really going to be subservient to Esav? So how does she know this? She has inside information. We all know, because we read a little further, we all know he's going to get another name. What's the other name? Other name is going to be Yisrael. Rivka knows deep inside he's Yisrael. Does she know the name? She doesn't know the name, but she knows he's not Yaakov. He's not Yaakov. And therefore she can never call him Yaakov. What does she call him? He calls him my son. Why? Because he's not Yaakov. He's not subservient to Esav. Why? Because she has inside information and she knows the way that the movie's going to end.
I just want to go back for a minute.
Yeah.
Maybe go forward is because Yitzchak's thoughts, you were describing go to the past, and I'm thinking that he would also be thinking about the future because, you know, what am I going to put in my will, which is clearly the Moreshet, which who's going to get the bracha?
Okay, so you're already, you're definitely cheating and going towards the end, but you're right about one thing, that with Yitzchak, you always need to suspect about the future, because even the name Yitzchak is future-oriented. Yitzchak, in the future, there's going to be laughter. It's something which is future-oriented, and maybe Yitzchak is somebody who's willing to invest long-term, which is, by the way, a very good and very basic Jewish gesture, is that we're not in for the short-term investment, we're in for the very long-term investment, and the long-term investment, perhaps Yitzchak sees something, but nonetheless, you notice the lack of symmetry. You notice what's going on over here. The strangest part of this is that Yitzchak loves Esav because of the hunting. And I just want to say that very, very clearly. That means that Yitzchak knows that Yaakov is the one who is like his father. And he knows that for this other son, he has to find a reason to love him. Anytime it says you have to go search and find a reason to love him, you know that he's working much harder. Which means, again, how fooled is Yitzchak by this whole situation? Yitzchak is looking in front of him and he realizes that there's a challenge. And again, I'm going to explain the challenge as we go a little bit more. But the challenge in my mind becomes something very simple. We have a new religion here. The new religion is called monotheism, which as far as Yitzchak is concerned is the oldest religion there ever was, but it's a new religion at this point. There are not many adherents. Who are going to be the people who this religion should speak to? Should it only be the spiritual and intellectual elite? Is this going to be a religion which is only going to speak to the Avrams of the world? which means I only invest in Yaakov because this is the easy investment. Or if this religion's ever going to have any kind of significance, doesn't there also need to be some way to communicate and to find place for people who are not exactly like Avraham and not exactly like Yaakov? Which means for this to be significant, he's looking at Esav. Esav is a challenge which he has over here. What do I do with Esav? So what does he do with Esav? He says, let me go find holiness in what Esav's doing. And by the way, this is just so simple. If Esav is a hunter for sport, right, again, if Esav is a hunter for sport, which is everything that we should believe based upon the previous pasuk, what does it say about him? Ish yodei atzayid ish sadeh. He is a hunter. It could be hunter for food, it could be a hunter for sport, he's a hunter. If he's just a hunter, so he sees something, he shoots, whatever, that's what he does. If Yitzchak says to him, son, bring me some food, what did Yitzchak just now do? He just now turned the hunting into a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah now? It's kibud av. He just now, Yitzchak has this ability of taking his son and turning him into an Eved Hashem. How did he become an Eved Hashem? Go help your father. Your father needs some food. Go bring some food to your father. And then it says that he loves him because he's doing this, because he sees this ability of giving him tasks to do, and at that point became a mitzvah. By the way, I'm going to say now, you're not going to understand, which is okay. I'm going to come back to this Bli Neder when we get to Vayishlach. But part of the way that the Seir La'Azazel works is in this exact same way. That's exactly what Yitzchak is doing over here, giving Esav something to do. But as I said, that's all I'm saying about it now. We'll Bli Neder tie it up in a couple of weeks. Yes. Okay. Because he doesn't want Yitzchak, again, I have to ask the question all the time, is Rashi talking about Esav, is he talking about Christianity? Is he talking about Yitzchak can possibly even love an Esav? Which means you just have to understand where they're coming from, where they're talking about these things. Again, not for today, but the most preposterous interpretation the Rashbam gives, having to do with Mechirat Yosef, that the brothers had nothing to do with it, is all because of Christian issues of his day and nothing to do with what it says in the Chumash. Even though he'll try to convince you, this is pshat, this is absolute pshat. It's not. Very, very, very far from pshat. So therefore, the Rashbam is really the Pashtan par excellence, and he's guilty of the same sin. But it comes down to this exact same issue. Okay, let's proceed. All that I'm trying to point out right now is that the strange thing that we just now read, again, the dysfunctionality of the relationship, well, there's lots of them. There's the mother who has a secret who can't tell the father. There's a mother who loves the child and she can't stand the other child, but she can't because she knows how the story ends. You have the father who sees the failings of his child but will love him because of the failings, and let me try to do something with him, let me try to lift him up, let me try to elevate him, make him something else. And then, by the way, you have another point. You have the pressure on Esav. I don't want you ever to underestimate the pressure that Esav has on him. His father wants him to be something he isn't. I'll say it again. Esav is a very superficial person. How many indications do you want from this week's parasha that for me to illustrate his superficiality? The fact that his father got married at 40, then he gets married at 40? Is that an indication of superficiality? Oh, I'm just like my father. Of course, how is it, and the marriages of Esav also point towards his spirituality. Who does he marry initially? No. Look at source 9. Vayehi Esav ben arba'im shana. So you caught the reference now, just like his father. Why? Because he respects his father. By the way, does Esav do kivud av va'im or only kivud av? Does Esav do kivud av va'em or only kivud av? V'yihi Esav ben arba'im shana v'yikach isha et Yehudit. I love that. Because why? Because he married a Jewish girl. Her name is Yehudit. Was she a Jewish girl? No. Yet Yehudit bat be'eri hachiti. He marries a Chittite girl. Ve'et basmat bat elon hachiti. Time to get married. He right away marries two. Who was the first one who married two? Lemech married two. Why did Lemech marry two? The rabbis tell us. In the old days, they were more sophisticated than they are today. Today, what happens? Somebody marries one wife. She gets old. You have children with her. She gets old. You dump her. You marry somebody who's young. In the old days, they used to do both at the same time. You marry one for procreation. You add one to hang on your arm when you go to parties. And that's what the Medrash tells us by Lemech, that he married two. Which means this was a well-known thing. One was for show, and the other one was for to do all the dirty work. Over here, right away, that Esav settles down and marries two women right away is a problem. That the two women that he marries are both Chittites is a problem. That sort of has been expressed along the way that this is not really the Avraham way. This is not what one should be doing. And the next pasuk says, "Vatiyena morat ruach liyitzlak ulerivka." His parents absolutely, they were depressed, they were upset, they went for counseling, what are we going to do? So on and so forth, both of them, Morat Ruach, they were absolutely depressed because of Yitzchak's life's choices, and he gets married. By the way, at the very, very end of the parsha, Esav's going to realize that he messed up in terms of who he married. So what does he do at the very end of the parsha? He realizes that his parents are very upset. Or, by the way, never actually says his parents are upset. He realizes that his father is upset. Just one second. Look at source number 16, but I want to go towards the end of it. Pasuk Mem Vav. V'toma Rivka el Yitzchak katzti b'chayayim b'nei b'not chet. These girls, my daughters-in-law, are destroying my life. By the way, she's getting a little dramatic over here. You like it? This is also an old-time Jewish custom. Absolutely, Rivka's going over the top and over the dramatic. That's it. What do I have a life for? What am I a life for? Look at the way my daughters-in-law treat me and so on and so forth. Wonderful. What happens afterwards? And I want to go again to the very, to source 17, the very end, Pasuk Chet. Vayar Esav ki ra'ot benot kanan be'enei Yitzchak aviv. He sees that his father doesn't like it. You notice who's missing? His mother. No relationship whatsoever. Both his parents can't stand them. His mother is... He doesn't care about his mother. By the way, why doesn't he care about his mother? Because he felt from the very beginning she really doesn't care about him. Again, you realize that, right? Everybody needs therapy over here, correct? So... He only responds because of his father. And here, once again, I told you, I want to find superficiality in Esav. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael, v'yikachet mochalat bat Yishmael ben Avraham achot neviot al nashav lolisha. He marries another wife. This is the wife he'll bring to his parents' Thanksgiving dinner. He doesn't get rid of the ones that his father hates. He just marries another one for show. So again, if you want, you can make an argument about Esav the sexist over here, because he sees women only in terms of their functionality. You have one to have children, one who's good looking, and now another one that you can bring to family occasions. All in terms of functionality, not in terms of any kind of real relationship over here, soulmate, so on. All that's missing over here, Esav with his three wives. Yes? And he sees how upset his father is. Okay, I'll have another wife so my father can see my other wife. This is Esav. So when I said Esav may not be as bad as Chazal tell us, but when you read the Psukim, he's not that impressive either. Okay, so let me go back to our basic question. And our basic question is going to be, so how confused was Yitzchak? When we move towards the end of Yitzchak's life, we, of course, have the issue of the brachot. Source number 12. V'yihig kizaken Yitzchak v'tichahena einav miraot v'yikra et Esav b'no hagadol v'yoma ilav b'ni v'yoma ilav hineni. So Yitzchak is getting old. By the way, he's going to live a long time afterwards. Yitzchak's not going to die so quickly. Yitzchak's going to live. He's still alive during Mechirat Yosef. He's still alive a long, long time from now. But Yitzchak is getting older. And his eyes, he's blinded. Of course, there are midrashim that connect his sight to the Akedah, which could mean that Yitzchak's perspective on the world has been affected by standing on top of a mountain and totally giving his, being prepared to give his life for God. That changes the way that one sees the world. V'ikrat Esav b'no hagadol. He calls Esav b'no hagadol. Again, relationships, all the time in relationship. He calls Esav his older son. V'yoma elav b'ni, my son. V'yoma elav hineni, here I am. I'm going to, I'm getting old. I don't know when I'm going to die. So again, so anybody who noticed this before, 100%. He is a hunter. Yitzchak says, go and hunt, meaning I want you to do what you do, but now he's commanding him to do it. When Yitzchak commands him to do it, it just now turns into a mitzvah. Again, he gives him a task. He gives this child of his, who's not the Yosheva Halim, he gives him tasks to do. So I can bless you. Which means, I want you to do something positive, because again, what does Yitzchak know? If he doesn't give him positive things to do, he doesn't do positive things. Again, it jumps off of the text at you, unless you don't notice it. He goes, I want to give you the, I want to give you a bracha. V'rivka shoma'at, as Rivka always does, she seems to have a very highly sense, developed sense of hearing. She hears things nobody else hears. She hears this. V'daber Yitzchak el Esav b'no, v'yelech Esav ha-sadeh l'tzud sa'id l'havi. So again, the sadeh. The sadeh, he goes to the sadeh. And another thing to notice, Yitzchak is connected to the sadeh as well. We found Yitzchak praying in the sadeh. We find Yitzchak trying to take the sadeh and turn the sadeh into something which is holy, which means he goes out into the field and prays in the field. Praying in the field is such an interesting thing, but it's taking a field. I mean, again, we will go all the way back to Cain and Hevel. We go all the way back to, you know, fields from the very beginning. And over here we have Yitzchak going into the field, but not planting in the field. Yitzchak prays in the field. Over here he goes, look, you're going to go and go hunt and bring me back the food. In the meantime, of course, Rivka hears and Rivka tells Yaakov to go and do it, which, needless to say, complicates things. And if you're Yaakov now, what do you do? Your mother just now told you to lie to your father. Okay, so is there a good solution to this? Which means we constantly have moral problems, impossible moral situations in this parsha. An impossible moral situation. Do I tell my husband about our son? Do I not tell him about the son? The son, Yaakov. So what do I do? He's somewhat stuck. Although the truth is he has information which we don't know right now, but I'm doing it specifically in this order, but there is some information that I'm skipping right now that I will still yet share with you, unless we run out of time. Source 13. V'yavol aviv v'yomer aviv v'yom hineni mi atabini. Again, he comes to, who's this? This is Yaakov dressed up as Esav. He comes in and says, Father, and he says, who are you, my son? What does that tell you? That already he has suspicions. Vayomer Yaakov el Aviv, Anochi Esav b'chorecha. Asita kasher dibarta alai, kum na. By the way, that's what gives it away. Kum na, what does kum na mean? Please, get up. When Esav will come in later, what will Esav say? When Esav comes in, just 1 second. No, it's, you don't have in front of you. It's Perek Kaf Zayin Pasuk. It is there? No, it's, I think it's the Pasuk before. Yeah, you don't have it. You don't have it. Pasuk before. Lamed Aleph. Vayas gam hu matamim v'yavela aviv. He also made food. He brought it to his father. V'yomel aviv yakum avi. Get up. V'yakum avi. 1 second. You hear the more abruptness to that? Again, lack of symmetry. Yakum avi. Dad, get up. I'm here to feed you. Get up, eat my food, and give me the bracha. That's how Esau spoke. Yes, I made it sound a little bit more abrupt, but that's exactly how he spoke. Now go back to how Yaakov speaks. What does Yaakov say? Kum na shva va'achla mitzedi ba'avor tvarcheni nafshecha. He speaks in a much more adin way, much more respectful way. You have the please in this, which is quite important. Pasakaf va'yomer Yitzchak el beno mazem yihar to lemtzo bini. Again, he's suspicious, and how did he get here so quickly? Va'yomer, and what does he say now? He kara Hashem elokecha lefanai. God was involved in this. Esav was never one of these guys saying Baruch Hashem, Amir Tz Hashem, and so on. Besides the Dishmaya, right? He's talking about God. V'yigash Yaakov v'Yitzchak aviv v'yimusheu. He starts to touch him. V'yomer, and he says, now, this is, remember I told you something else was before? This is the most important pasuk in the whole parasha. But, as always, when it comes to interpretation, the question is going to be which tone of voice to use? A, tone of voice, and how do you hear it? Second, does he finish the sentence, this is connected, does he finish the sentence with a question mark or with an exclamation point? Does he say, Hakol kol Yaakov idaini de Esav? Like, what is going on over here? Or does he say, Hakol kol Yaakov idaini de Esav? Do you realize how those two different ways of reading it may make somewhat of a difference over here? Which one do you intuit as being the right way of reading it? Is it a question mark or is it an exclamation point? If it's a question mark, he stops. If it's a question mark, he has to stop. He's about to give something very valuable. He's about to give something very valuable, and he's going to be very valuable. He doesn't know what it is. You don't proceed if you don't know what it is. He's actually convinced of something else. What is he convinced of? He's convinced that he's succeeded. He's convinced that he's turned Esav into Yaakov. He's convinced that he's found within Esav that he succeeded. He's been giving him good things, tasks to do, mitzvot to do, and now he's coming back and he's talking a little bit gentler. And now he's, again, there's two possibilities. Does he think that Yaakov has now developed the inner Esav within him? Or does he think that Esav has developed the inner Yaakov within him? Which means those are the two possibilities over here. So what has Yitzchak has been invested in the whole time, what he's been investing in, is trying to find the spirituality within Esav. So what does he think right now when he says, Akol kol Yaakov adayni de Esav? It's with an exclamation point. He thinks he's succeeded. He thinks he has succeeded. Now, the other thing, I keep saying this is the most important thing, the other thing that you have to keep your eye on as you move through this parsha is the same thing that you have to keep your eye on from the moment that Avram stepped on the scene. And what was that? You have to keep your eye on the brachot. Which bracha is being given to whom? In case you think that Yitzchak really believes that Esav was the one who's going to inherit him, that Esav is the one, that he was totally confused, you know, like Rashi sort of leads us towards, that he would ask him, do you take ma'aser on salt, or take ma'aser on straw, and so on, and that he was totally convinced of Esav's tzidkut, Esav's righteousness. If that's the case, then what should he be giving him? He should be giving him all the blessings that he has. Now, when I say keep your eye on the blessings, on Watergate you have to keep your eye on the money, over here you have to keep your eye on the blessings. There are three blessings to be concerned with. First blessing, that he gives to Yaakov when he thinks it's Esav, which means that's the bracha which is meant for Esav. The second bracha is the bracha he gives to Esav when he knows that it's Esav. What's the third bracha? Third bracha is the one that he gives to Yaakov when he knows that it's Yaakov. Say that again? There are three brachot here. The bracha that he gives to Yaakov when he thinks it's Esav, the bracha that he gives to Esav when he knows that it's Esav, and the bracha that he gives to Yaakov when he knows that it's Yaakov. Do you realize now that that is going to, once you figure that out, everything else is going to become clear? Yes? Because when Yaakov comes in dressed as Esav, and Yitzchak arguably thinks that he succeeded, the question is, succeeded at what? He has succeeded in taming the Nimrod clone who in the previous incarnation has taken Avraham and thrown him into a furnace because he hated anything that was holy in such a profound way. So now the question is, and by the way, okay, now, do you want the by the way, or, the by the way is interesting. The by the way is, is that what gave Yitzchak any kind of hope that he can succeed in this? The reason is that he grew up. When he grew up, he saw that there is a possibility to succeed. There's a very, very strange midrash, which is cited by the Targum Yonatan. I have it for you back here in source number 5. V'kasher shama Avraham ki nishba achiv, when Avram hears that Lot was kidnapped. So when Avram goes to war, 4 kings against the 5 kings, so who does he take with him? What does the Chumash say? He takes how many people? 318. What did Rashi say? Who did he take with him? Eliezer. One guy, Eliezer. How can Eliezer be so strong? How can Eliezer be so brave? Targum Yonatan answers it. He says, because it's Eliezer ben Nimrod. Eliezer is the son of Nimrod. That's how we win. They try to kill us and we convert their children. Do you realize that the biggest victory we ever had against paganism when we turned them into Christians? I know you don't think this is a victory. We took pagans and we gave them guilt. That's what we gave them. We gave the world guilt. Oh, you're going to try to kill us? Fine, we're going to turn your children into monotheists. And we did the same thing with Islam. Which means this is ultimately the victory. Nimrod tries to kill Avraham, and what, according to the Medrash, what happens? His son sees him walk out of the thing and walks away with Avraham. How can Avraham have a guy with him who's so strong, he's compared to 318 people? Why? Because he's Nimrod's son. And again, by the way, it changes the whole complexion of this. But if that's the case, Yitzchak already saw the possibility of taking somebody like Nimrod and utilizing him, having him part of the team, having him with us. Yitzchak understands that he needs to do this with his own son. He needs to do this with Esav. He needs to give him spirituality. He needs to give him things to do. But again, I'm going to ask, but how fooled was he? So when we read carefully the bracha that he gives to Yaakov when he thinks of Esav. By the way, if you want, any of you who grew up watching Get Smart, the Beis Halevi grew up watching Get Smart, there's no question in my mind, the Beis Halevi over here says that Esav knew that Yaakov was going to try to get the bracha from him. So Esav said that if Yaakov tries to get the bracha from me, he's going to dress up and he's going to talk like Esav. So I'm going to come in and talk like Yaakov. So if I come in and talk like Yaakov, then you'll know that I'm really Esav. But Yaakov goes in, dresses like Esav, and talks like Yaakov, and that's how he knows. Yes? And that's why he says, oh, Hakoko Yaakov, dying to Esav. Okay, say it, now I know that it's really Yaakov.
No.
Then I know it's really Esav, right? Now I know it's really Esav. So the Beis Halevi really says this, as I said, the only thing that could be that the writer for, I think it was Buck Henry, he must be a descendant of the Beis Halevi. That's all that I can possibly say. But believe it or not, I don't think that's really pshat. Okay? Again, there's two possibilities. Does he think that Yaakov has become so, you know, sneaky? Or does he think that Esav has become so holy? So the answer is he thinks that Esav has become so holy. And let's take a look at what bracha he actually gives him. So he says, who are you? And he says, please get up. And again, the whole language now is much nicer. Koko Yaakov, Demi Esav. He gives him to eat. He asks him again in Pasuk of Dalet, Vayoma Tazia Bini Esav, Vayoma Ani, I am. He comes here, come closer, Vayomi Geshav Acholamitzer Bini, right, and so on, that I can bless you. Gives him some food to drink and so on. He says, come over, I want to smell you. I want to smell the hunt, smell the field. Vayigashil Vayishakl Vayarach et Reach Begadav, Vayivrcheu Vayoma Re'erab Re'ach Bini Kireach Sadeh Asher Bercho Hashem. I smell the field that was blessed by God. Again, the field, the Sadeh, is becoming elevated. It's this idea of giving holiness to that which is outside in the field. And of course, Rashi brings the Midrash that he smells Gan Eden in front of him and so on. Vayitain lecha Elokim, here's the bracha that he gives, so pay attention. Vayitain lecha Elokim, may God give you, mitala shemayim v'mishnei ha'aretz. How would you label that blessing? A blessing of?
Gashmiut.
V'rov dagon v'tirosh, again, a bracha of Gashmiut. Ya'avducha amim, v'yishtachafu lecha le'umim, right, nations, you will be, again, this is strength. And then is the reason that real reason that Rivka had to move in. You should be the master, stronger than your brother, and the son of your mother should bow down to him. Arurcha arur umurecha baruch. Those who curse you, be cursed. Bless you, be blessed. Which, by the way, reminds us of a blessing to Avraham. Can you tell me what's missing? Okay, don't tell me what's missing. Let's keep on reading. Everything over here is blessings of power, gashmiut, and power. That's what he wanted to give to Esav. On the other hand, Esav will then come in soon, right? In source 16, Esav's going to come in, and he said, "Who are you?" Right? And he's already talked gruff again, get up, give me the blessing, and whatever. Now he's very scared. Why was he scared? Because now he realized the truth. What's the truth? It wasn't Esav who has channeled his inner Yaakov, that he was completely underestimated Yaakov. Because what did Yaakov do? Yaakov has now channeled his Esav. And that's something he didn't. Again, what's an easier thing to do in this world? Will it be easier to take business people and give them a little Yerut Shemayim, or take yeshiva students and turn them into business people? That's it. That would be easier. Take yeshiva students, okay? Depends what kind of yeshiva student. Kisha pasuk lamed dalet. Kishamoa Esav et divrei aviv vayitzak tzaka gedola umara ad maod. And you'll have echoes later on with Haman on that. Vayomer lo aviv bercheni gam ani avi. Give me a blessing. So does Yitzchak have any other blessings up his sleeve? But what does he say? Vayomer bo achicha b'mirma. Your brother came surreptitiously. By the way, Bir Mirma may be why he's really impressed. I know when we read it, it sounds like it's really bad. He may actually be impressed with that. Your brother came surreptitiously, v'yikach bircha techa, and he took your blessing, emphasized your blessing. V'yomer chikarash shmo Yaakov, v'kvein ezeh pamayim. Right? He took away et bichorati lakach, v'neata lakach brachati. Vayomer lo etzal tali bracha. Do you have any bracha left for me? Vayan Yitzchak v'yomer Esav hin gvir samtiv lach. I made him stronger than you. But kolachav natati lo lavadim v'tagan v'tirosh samachtani. And he just really repeats what I gave him. V'lachayfo ma'aseh b'nei. Vayomer Esav el aviv habracha achati lacha avi. Do you only have one bracha? You have no other brachot. Bracheni gam avi. Right? Ani avi. Give me a blessing. V'yisrael lav kol vayefk. Vayan Yitzchak aviv. Which is a lower grade of what he already gave. Again, Gashmet. It's a lower grade bracha that he already had given. Which means he finally came in touch with Rivka's prophecy. Ulo mi'al tzavarecha. Vayistom Esav et Yaakov ala bracha asher berchu aviv. Vayoma Esav b'libo yikruvu yimei evil avi. Vaharga et Yaakov achi. My father won't. When the day will come, we're mourning from our father. Actually, yikruvu. What does yikruvu mean? What does the word yikruvu mean? Yikruvu yimei evil avi. May my father's death come quick. The in source 18, the one of the Balei Tosfot, the Hadri Zakenim, writes that at that moment he came up with a plan. That's why he decided to marry Yishmael's daughter. He was going to marry Yishmael. Look at 18. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. B'shash v'day Yitzchak ala brachot liYaakov. Amar Esav vayelech v'etchatein liYishmael. V'tein lo etzah laharoget Yitzchak. He said he's going to get Yishmael all worked up to kill Yitzchak. Once Yishmael kills Yitzchak, what's he going to do? He'll kill Yishmael. He'll kill Yishmael for having killed his father. So that way he'll inherit from Yishmael and inherit from Yitzchak. And then Yaakov will be left without anybody to protect him. And then he'll kill Yaakov also. So it says, you know, at this point, let it speed up. That's what he's working off over here. Now, all of this is interesting. He says they're going to kill him and so on and so forth. Now, let's skip a little bit because we're running out of time. Rivka is going to tell Yaakov to run away. Again, in our complicated family, Rivka tells Yaakov to run away because your brother wants to kill you. Rivka then goes to her husband and says, these girls that Esav married are killing me. Yaakov better marry somebody decent. So then Yitzchak tells, right, like the way she manipulates him, then Yitzchak tells Yaakov to go to Lavan so that he can find him a wife. So his mother tells him, run away because your brother wants to kill you, and his father says, go and find your wife. So Yitzchak now is on two separate missions. But at the end of the day, he meaning Yitzchak will call, I have it here, Yitzchak will call in Yaakov and give him a bracha before he goes. 17. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov. Remember, so far we have the bracha that Yaakov, that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov when he thought he was Esav. Then the bracha that he gave to Esav when he knew that it was Esav. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, vayivarech oto, and he blessed him. Vayitzaveyo v'yomer, lo tikai isham ibnot Kanaan. Right? Don't marry a local girl. Kum lech padana aram, beit abituel, avimecha, v'kach lecham isham isham ibnot lavan, achimecha. V'kel shakai yivarech otcha.
By the way, it's really interesting. The bracha of Zerah, that's one of the bracha that we kept on seeing with Avraham, forgot to give that to Esau. That was never on the table. The other bracha, V'yitain lecha et birkat Avraham, lecha ulzarecha itcha, lirishtacha et eretz megurecha shenatan lokim l'Avraham. What did he just now give to him? Eretz Yisrael. That was never on the table. The two main brachot that Avraham received, the bracha of children and the bracha of Eretz Yisrael, he gave that to Yaakov when he knew that it was Yaakov. So what I'm asking, remember what I told you, you have to follow the brachot? So now you have to start all over again. Okay, what was Yitzchak thinking? What's going on in Yitzchak's head? Yitzchak, does he know that Yaakov is his spiritual son? 100%. What does he give him? He gives him full control of Birchat Avram, of Eretz Yisrael. He blesses him with children, which means the blessings that Avram have, he gives to him. But we got a little fooled before. Those who bless you, bless, curse you. What bracha did he give to Esau? He gave him bracha of Gashmiut. He gave him bracha that, not just Gashmiut, but also that you will be stronger than your brother. Which means not just Gashmiut, also power. He gave him Gashmiut and power, and that's what Rivka wouldn't have, which means, what in the world is Yitzchak thinking? And the answer is really quite simple. And if you want to see who says it, the one who says it is source number 30, is the Sfat Emet, which I'm not going to read with you. You will read it on your own. But the Sfat Emet says that he really believed the two of them are going to work together. Sort of like a... Sort of, and he says that right here. The Sfat Emet says that. He believed the two are going to work together, but he has no question in his mind that the spiritual one is going to be Yaakov. Esav, he wants to take the power of Esav. He wants, again, just like Eliezer was the tough guy in back of Avraham. This is going to be a perfect match. He needs to bring him within the spiritual world and take his physical things and make them spiritual, and have the two of them work together. Which means Esau's supposed to go out to the field, he's supposed to hunt and bring food, and take care of Yaakov, and that's what he's training him for. Go out, bring me food, and then I'll give you a bracha. Which means your bracha will only be when you go out to get food and you bring it back to me. When you take care of me, that is how you get your bracha. You don't take care of me, you don't get the bracha. But who's the one who's going to really inherit Yitzchak? It's going to be Yaakov. So what happens when Yitzchak's no longer here? Who is Esau supposed to be going out to the field and getting food for? He's supposed to be going out to the field and getting food for Esau's supposed to be going out to the field and getting food for Yaakov. Which means it's never that Yitzchak had in the back of his mind, oh, the Jews in the future will daven, Baruch at Hashem, okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Esav. That never was in his mind. He knew that Yaakov was, he didn't miss that. He knew that Yaakov was like his father. So now, if we just finish up with our dysfunctional family, we have Yitzchak through the years seeing the two sons and saying, the two, you're going to work together. You're going to have a partnership. You're going to have the Yaakov-Esav partnership. Esav's going to take care of Yaakov's, who's involved in the spiritual world. Esav is going to take care of the physical things. He'll go out to the field. He's going to hunt. He's going to take care of all these things. Yaakov, on the other hand, he's going to be involved in the spiritual things. The two of them working together, that's going to be this unbelievable tikkun. That this is going to work. And now we can go back to the section that we skipped. The section that we skipped. And 1 second. That's what Yitzchak keeps saying. But what does Rivka keep saying to Yaakov? What does she whisper in his ear? Your brother's a loser. It's not going to work. He's not going to live up to it. So now, again, back to our dysfunctionality. The father, you're going to work together. The mother's saying, just don't invest in him. It's just not going to work. How does she know this? Because she has this wonderful inside information. So now we can go back to page 2 and we can read the continuation of what happens in source number 2. Pasuk Kaf Chet, Vayahov Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, Rivko hevet et Yaakov, Vayozid Yaakov nazid, Yaakov makes food,
V'yavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. He's tired. V'yomer Esav v'yakov aliteni na min ha'adom hazeh ki ayef anochi. You'll give me food because I'm tired. By the way, what is supposed to happen? Esav is supposed to come in from the field and give food to Yaakov. What does Esav do? I'm tired. By the way, do you notice what it doesn't say? It doesn't say I'm hungry. It says I'm tired. There are those midrashim that connect his feelings right now with the fact that Avram died, and that therefore this whole meal was a meal of mourning, and he basically gives up. The first time in his life, he really faces death and of a family member and says, everyone's going to die. And by the way, it's interesting. The Midrash says, Nimrod dies, Avram dies, everybody dies. Why should I bother trying to be like Avraham? Why should I even bother with the charade anymore? That's what the Midrash says is the background. But he says, Ki ayef anochi, alken kara shmo Edom. That's why they called him Red. Vayomer Yaakov, and Yaakov says, okay, if you're asking me to take care of you, then obviously you're not really the Bechor. You're not really to live up to the responsibilities. And what else is he saying? My mother is right. Vayomer Yaakov mechmar kayomet Bechor techeli. So sell me your birthright. Vayomer Esav, hinei nochi olech lamut, v'lamazeh li Bechorah. I'm going to die also. What do I need this for? By the way, you do hear depression here. V'yom Yaakov yishavali kayom v'yishavalo v'yinkorit b'chorato liYaakov v'Yaakov natan la'esav lechem unezira d'shim v'yochav v'yesh v'yokom v'yilach. Yaakov takes care of Esav. That completely explodes what Yitzchak's vision was. V'yivez Esav et b'chora. He detested the b'chora. Do you realize what that means? That as far as he was concerned, this was the best deal he ever did. He got rid of the responsibility. He got rid of all of this. What is it? I mean, Rashi says that the Bechor would have to work in the Beit HaMikdash, and Esav is somebody who never wanted to get his hands bloody, right? Or never, when it really came down for holiness. That's really what Rashi's telling us. On the other hand, I think that the Bechor over here really means that who's going to have the responsibility of the Brit Bein HaBetarim? Who's going to go down and take the slavery? Who's going to, long-term investment? Who's going to put 400 years into this? And this is Esav. I don't want this. I just want to hunt. I just want to have fun. Leave me alone. I don't want responsibility. I don't want to live. I can't live up to my father's expectations. Just enough already. Which means Yaakov going into this has heard these two different narratives, and now he knows which narrative is really the correct narrative. So as I said, this is a very, very confusing family. It's not a very happy family. What we have over here is all this missing communication, and the curse is the curse of too much knowledge, the curse of knowing how the story is going to end up. And once Rivka knows this, what choices does she have? But as I said, just to put it all together, I think that Rivka made the only choice that she really felt that she could. She can't tell her husband. She tells her husband that will absolutely, this will have a chance. Yitzchak, for his part, sees the opportunity, sees the possibility, knows that Yaakov is the holy son, knows that Yaakov is going to get the land of Israel, knows that he's going to, which bracha he has. I mean, how strong was that before when Esav says, you have no other brachot left? He goes, your brother took your bracha. He's got another bracha up his sleeve. Matter of fact, he's got a pretty good bracha up his sleeve still. He's got the land of Israel up his sleeve still, but that he can't give to Esav because that was never meant for Esav. That was never meant for him at all. So therefore, anybody wants to argue how much he fooled him and how much Yitzchak didn't know, Yitzchak knows far more than we think that he knows. And his shock about Hakol Kol Yaakov Yidayim De Esav is that he thought he succeeded in Esav to bring the two parts together, but not to replace Yaakov, simply to make Esav into a mensch. That was the whole goal. He thought that he succeeded. But what he ends up realizing is quite the opposite. And this is the curse that Yaakov will inherit. And what's the curse? That now Yaakov is going to have to live both sides of that life. Now Yaakov is going to have to live both as an Esav and as a Yaakov, both as the man of the field and as the man of the tent. And the second that this happens, Yaakov's life got a lot more complicated. But that's for next time.